Okay, the next lecture is on boundaries. I told you before that one of the main symptoms that codependents have is that they have non-existent boundary systems, damaged boundary systems, or they have a system of walls for boundaries. Now, in order for you to even begin to understand what I'm talking about, I need to talk to you about what boundaries are. So I'm going to give you a way to kind of visualize or conceive of your own boundary system. To start off with, I want to tell you about what they're supposed to do for you. They have functions. Your boundary system protects you. It protects you at all levels of your reality. It is designed to protect you in terms of your body, designed to protect you in terms of your thinking, in terms of your feeling reality, and in terms of your thinking. It protects that. The other thing your boundary system does for you is that it ensures that your behavior is appropriate, because as you have a boundary system, you will automatically be respectful of somebody else's boundary and give them the right to have one, which will keep you from offending, truly offending other people. So it's about self-protection, but it's also about keeping you from being an offender. It does both. Now, as I said before, there are four components to your boundary system. There's a physical component and a sexual component. There's an emotional component and a spiritual, intellectual component. The physical sexual components make up what I call the external boundary. The emotional spiritual components make up the internal boundary. They work differently. The external boundary functions outside your body. It is truly represented by this bell-shaped curve.
I'll try blue.
Boundary is experienced again outside your body, and it travels away from you and towards you as an issue of protection. It establishes distance and touching between you and other people, and again it moves out and it moves in. The internal boundary, however, doesn't function that way. It functions as you have it to protect you from things coming at you, so it stops things. Sometimes it functions to let things in that are appropriate to let things into you, and so that you can experience them. And it throws things out of your awareness when you need to, when you've taken in something that isn't appropriate for you to have. It allows you to throw it out of your internal environment. So the two, you have four components and two systems that make up an entire boundary system. And again, the external moves out and in. It is experienced outside your body. The internal moves by letting things into your body, keeping things out and throwing things out from within. It's an internal experience. The internal usually is the more difficult one to set and conceive. Now, each part of your boundary system protects and allows you to be appropriate in each area of your reality. And your reality, again, is made up of your body, or what you look like, made up of your thinking reality, or how you give meaning to your environment. It protects your feeling reality, or your emotions that are generated by your thinking. And it protects your behavior, what you do and don't do. The external boundary both protects your body, period. The physical boundary protects the physical aspects of your body that are non-sexual. The sexual part of your boundary system protects the sexual aspects of your body. When you have a physical boundary, you will find yourself being physically appropriate with other people and able to physically protect yourself. When you have a good sexual boundary, you will find that you are sexually appropriate as well as being able to sexually protect yourself. Now, the emotional boundary protects your feeling reality and your behavior. And what I mean by that is it allows you to have your own feeling reality and to behave in the way you need to behave in order to be comfortable or to be in charge and protect yourself. But it also gives you an allows you to let other people have their feeling reality and their behavior reality, because you know that they have the right to do that when you have an emotional boundary. The spiritual intellectual boundary protects your thinking reality. It allows you to think whatever you think and want to think. And you also, when you have it, give other people the right to do their own thinking. For example, I've been standing up here all day long giving you a lot of my thoughts. I believe what I'm telling you, or I wouldn't be up here standing telling you that. And I know I have the right to think what I'm thinking, but I also know that you have the right to do your own thinking. You know, you have the right, as far as I'm concerned, to walk out of here and say, Pia does not know what she's talking about. That's all a bunch of hogwash, and I'm not listening. And you know, I would tell you that you absolutely have the right to do that. You'll face the consequences of that kind of thinking, but it's okay. It's okay for you to do that. It sounds funny, but that's true. Now, let me talk to you about how you set up each part of your boundary system so you get an idea of what this kind of thing is about. Now, I guess I didn't type these out for you, so I'll say them slowly, and I would suggest you write these down, but I can only go over them just so fast. If you don't get it, I've got them written down up here, and you guys, after all this is done, can take this sheet of paper and copy them down, and it is on those tapes too. In order to set your physical boundary, you need to have this kind of statement going on within you at all times, and that's this: I have the right to determine when, where, how, and who is going to touch me, and how close I am going to allow you to stand to me. That I, what I'm saying is that I at all times have a right to determine how close somebody is going to get to me and whether they're going to touch me or not. This is my body. Nobody has the right to breathe in my face or touch me without my permission. On the other hand, as I give myself the right to do that, I also give you the right to determine whether I'm going to touch you and how close I'm going to stand to you. That each of us have the right to negotiate that. How you set the sexual boundary up is with a very similar statement, except it has to do with sexual behavior. It goes like this. Again, I have the right to determine with whom, where, when, and how I am going to be sexual. What that means is that nobody has the right to tell me I have to be sexual with them. Nobody has the right to tell me how I'm going to do that, when I'm going to do that, or where I'm going to do that. That is my business to determine that. I need only face the consequences of my choices. On the other hand, as I have one and I determine that for me, I also give you the right to do that. So if I'm trying to negotiate being sexual with you and you say no thank you, that's the end of it. But I know you have the right to tell me, no, I don't want to be sexual with you, or I don't want to do it that way, or I don't want to do it out on the decking, or whatever it is that you want to do, you have the right to do that. So it allows me to be sexually appropriate, it allows me to be sexually protective. You set the emotional boundary with a more complicated statement, with a couple of caveats after it. And it is the hardest one to set. It is usually the most damaged one for a codependent. And that's because as a child is abused, the very statements told to them during the act of abuse will cause the thing to go, the emotional boundary to be automatically set in reverse. The emotional boundary is set with this statement: my reality is more about my history than what you are saying or doing in front of me. Again, my reality is about what I look like, how I think, how I feel, and what I do or don't do. My reality is more about me and my history than anything you are saying or doing in front of me. And vice versa, your reality, as I observe it, your reality is more about you and your history than anything I am saying or doing in front of you. See, the fact of the matter is, well, there's a couple things here. The fact of the matter is that when I notice something happening out in my environment, what happens to me is I observe it and it goes into my brain. My brain gives it all kinds of meaning. As a result of that meaning I give it, I generate my feeling reality. As a result of that, I go into some behavior. Now, you might be doing something out there I'm looking at and then taking it in and doing all that. Do you know that how I take it in, what meaning I give it, what feelings I generate, and what I do is more about me and my history, especially when I'm codependent, than anything about what you were doing. And it goes back to that thing Pat told me. Pia, you can take perfectly good data into your head, and by the time you finish rumbling around up there, it has nothing to do with reality. And vice versa. That was hard. That was bad news. I wanted to blame him. You see, when a person's emotional boundary is in reverse, what you do is you blame other people for what's going on with you. Well, if you just wouldn't look at her that way, I wouldn't have to feel jealous. If you'd just come home at night when I want you to, I would feel safe, or whatever it is. You blame other people for your own reality. You know, if you'd be nice to me, I'd dress better, or whatever it is. And it goes on all four levels. You blame other people for your reality. You know, if you'd be nice to me, I wouldn't have to overeat and be huge, or whatever. You blame other people for what's going on with you, but on the other hand, as it's in reverse, you will take responsibility here for what's going on there, feel guilty about what's going on with the other person that you're observing, like you believe you cause other people to feel something. I can't tell her that I'm upset with her behavior, I'll hurt her feelings. Only somebody with their emotional boundary in reverse could even begin to say that, let alone believe it. You don't cause anybody to feel anything. You say something, they're the ones that take it in, give it meaning, and whack themselves out with it. You don't have the power to cause anybody else to feel anything. They do that all on their own. You're not that powerful. This is the hardest kind of boundary to get straightened out. We're locked into this because as a child is abused, what happens? The parent leans over the child and says, you know, if you'd shape up, I wouldn't have to do this to you. I'm doing this because you made me do it. I'm feeling this because you caused me to feel this way. So the child learns to throw that thing in reverse. Now do it every time. It's terrible. It's abusive. There's two caveats that go along with this emotional boundary that are extremely important to note. The first one is this. With the emotional boundary system, although I know that I am not responsible for how somebody else is responding to me, if I am in a relationship with them, I am responsible for noting the impact of my behavior on them. So I might have done something over here, and my husband over there is reacting to it. I know when my boundary is standing up well, that his reaction to whatever I've done is more about him and his history than what I've said or done, as long as I haven't offended him. But I am in a relationship with him. It's important to note the impact of my behavior. I may want to adjust some of that behavior because I love and care about him. And I may want to change something in order for us to live more comfortably, even though I know it's more about his history. So I am responsible for noting the impact. If I have any hope of ever being in a relationship with this person, I need to note the impact. That gives me options for changing or not changing something. But that's all I'm responsible for. The other caveat in here is this, that if one person in an exchange has offended the other by punching through their boundary system, and I'm talking about major issues of offense, if one of them in their behaving or their talking has physically, sexually, emotionally, or spiritually attacked the other person, in the same way I talked about those major issues of abuse, like somebody's walked up and punched somebody, touched them sexually against their will, screamed at them, or attacked their intellectual ability, major offensive acts are going on. When that's going on, this boundary, the statement that sets this boundary does not hold. Because If one of you has offended the other by punching through their boundary system and engaged in an act of offense, then the person who did the offense is accountable for the effect on the other person. In other words, you can't punch somebody and when they respond with a lot of anger and pain, look at them and say, that's not about you and your history, let me slapping you across the face. Because that's not the case. That is not the case. So there's two caveats to this. One's about, although I won't take responsibility for what you're doing over there, I will note the impact of my behavior on you. But if I have offended you, I am accountable for the effect over there. That's a big boundary. It is the one that establishes the most intense experiences of intimacy. The spiritual boundary, the spiritual intellectual boundary, is simpler, thank goodness. It's set with this statement. And I've talked about it before already. I have the right to think whatever I want to think. I need only face the consequences of my own thinking. See, although I know you have to face the consequences of your own thinking, I do too. I can think whatever I want. I need only face the consequences of my own thinking. So in order to set up your boundary system, you have to own those statements and start acting them, start acting and thinking in that manner in order to create them for yourselves. Now, I want to go into talking about how to begin to assess the condition of each part of your boundary system. And I'll run through them quite quickly so you can get an idea of that. And again, there's four different conditions: none, a wall, a damaged boundary, or you can have a boundary intact. And what you have to do is you have to assess each component of the system, because each component may be in a different condition. Like you could have a non-existent physical boundary, a damaged sexual boundary, an intact emotional boundary, and a wall for a spiritual boundary. It just depends on what you have. And I'll run down through those quite quickly, but I will run down through them. This is the kind of thing you have to do in order to write out that step one under the fifth issue of boundaries under powerlessness. In terms of your physical sexual boundary, they're kind of figured out the same way, so I'll do them both together, but I'm talking about either physical or sexual behavior. If you have a non-existent physical or sexual boundary, you won't have any way of knowing when somebody is being sexually or physically inappropriate with you. You'll have the sense that something's going on that isn't okay, but you won't know what it is. Because there's no boundary there to tell you. It'll just be kind of uncomfortable. You'll believe that the uncomfortableness or what's going on is about you and not about the person doing it. So you won't have a sense of anything there. And you won't be able to confront offending behavior. On the other hand, because you don't have one, you're set up to be sexually or physically offensive with other people because you don't have a sense of that there, and you won't know that they have the right to physical comfort and sexual comfort. You'll be in their face all the time. You'll be doing things like standing in people's faces and refusing to move back. You'll be about touching people sexually against their will or insisting they be sexual with you. On the other hand, you won't be able to say no. Somebody walks up and says, you want to be sexual? You kind of go, why do I want to be sexual with you? But you go, okay. It's like you cannot say no. Somebody's standing in your face and you just stand there going, something's wrong here, but I don't know what to do. If you have a wall for a physical or a sexual boundary, it will be made up of anger or fear. If you have a wall of anger that you're using as that external boundary, and we're talking about the physical boundary, what it is you're walking around, or it depends on which one it is, you're walking around in terms of physical stuff, you'll look real angry and you'll notice everybody avoiding you. Nobody's approaching you, nobody's trying to hug you or get close to you. If it's for a sexual boundary, what it is nobody's trying to negotiate anything sexual with you. You're walking around looking like, don't touch me, don't negotiate with me, I am not interested. If it's a wall of fear, with either boundary, you'll be about keeping physical or sexual distance from other people. You'd be hiding in the bushes, staying at home, being where nobody could possibly touch you or negotiate sexual behavior with you, about running away and keeping big distance from other people, but it's a wall. It's made up of fear. If you have a damaged physical or sexual boundary, what that means is that that you'll either be sexually or physically unprotected or sexually and physically offensive, but have an awareness that what's going on is not okay. It's like part of the time you can protect yourself and part of the time you can't. Part of the time you can be appropriate, part of the time you can't. And it's people selective. It's like around certain people your sexual boundary fails, around certain people your physical boundary fails, or around certain people you get offensive. It's like you might have a very good and intact sexual boundary, but when it comes to negotiating a relationship with your wife, you force yourself on her, or vice versa. Get real demanding and abusive. But around other people, you never think to do that. You got a damaged sexual boundary in that case, or maybe about physical behavior. It just depends on what behavior you're talking about. If you have a boundary that's intact, you will be able to protect yourself physically or sexually, and be about being sexually and physically appropriate with others, even when they don't have a fully developed boundary system.
This is the end of Side 1. For more valuable information, turn cassette over now and continue to listen on Side 2. Do not fast forward.
Okay, when it comes to the emotional boundary, when you don't have one, the thing is in total reverse. You blame other people for your reality and in turn take responsibility for their reality. When there's a wall instead of a good emotional boundary, what that's about is when you walk around with a wall of anger for an emotional boundary, you could care less what somebody else is feeling or what they're doing. You're not noticing. She's got a wall of anger, you're walking around, trucking around. Who cares what's going on with you in terms of your feeling and what you want and what you're doing? If you've got a wall of fear, you're about, again, distancing from people. And again, it doesn't matter to you what somebody else is feeling or doing. You could care less, and you're not about telling them what's going on with you. Absolutely stops, any kind of wall stops intimacy dead in its tracks. If you have a damaged emotional boundary, what's going on with that is that around certain people, the thing flies in reverse, or depending upon how damaged it is. You know, you can have a very, very damaged system with very little there, or you can have it just around one person, the thing flies in reverse. So you got a fairly intact boundary with one little area that'll throw it in the reverse, like whenever you get around your husband or your wife or your boss or your mother-in-law, all reason goes out the window and you're about blaming, bony fingering and taking responsibility in areas that aren't in none of your business. If you have an emotional boundary that's intact, you know that what's going on out there is more about them than you. What's going on with you is more about you than them, and unless somebody's offended. But also when that's going on, that you know when somebody's sharing their reality with you and it's about your behavior, you need to note the impact of your behavior on them. On the intellectual boundary, when you stand in life without one, that means that your thinking reality is based on whoever you're listening to at the moment. You swing from pillar to post with your thinking reality. If you have a wall of anger, or a wall of fear, you could care less what somebody else is thinking. Nothing goes in, nothing goes out. You don't share and you don't listen. When you have a damaged intellectual boundary, what happens is around certain people it fails you. It's like if a priest says it, you have to believe it. Or if your boss says it, you have to believe it. If your husband says it, you gotta believe it. Or if a teacher says it, you gotta believe it. If a therapist says it, you gotta believe it. If a doctor says it, you gotta believe it. So it's people specific. So around this, and it can be in, you know, terribly damaged, but some of it there, or it could be absolutely fairly intact with only one person it fails. If you have an intellectual boundary, what happens with that is you have the ability to listen, assess, and make a decision about whether you're going to take information out, in, or keep it out, or watch it. Now that's what I want to talk about next. how to establish boundaries. You guys are on overload, that's real normal. Setting up your external boundary actually is fairly easy. And what I told you about that is that this boundary moves out and in, depending upon what's going on. It is actually an energy experience between two people, that as you approach somebody, you can feel that external boundary. Now, I've asked Amy to come up and demonstrate this external boundary. So a friend of mine, show you how to do that. Now, what I want you to do, Amy, is kind of go stand over in that corner. Well, about there, yeah, you don't need to start. Now, don't do anything until I tell you to, okay? Now, what I'm going to ask her to do is show you how you can establish a boundary with someone. You do it by eye contact, and we're talking about the external boundary. Now, what I'm going to tell her to do when I look back at her is to make eye contact with me and start walking towards me. And walk until she starts, walk to me until she starts feeling uncomfortable. At the moment she starts feeling uncomfortable, and she'll know that because she won't want to look me in the face, she'll start turning away. Then she needs to start stepping back, maintaining eye contact, and when she's then comfortable, that means she can maintain eye contact. She will then have established that external boundary with me. Okay? So go ahead and do that, Amy. Right about there. Now stay still, because I want to show some people. I'm going to move inside your boundary. Is that okay? Okay, no, but just stay right there now. What she has just told us is that her external boundary with me is about 18 inches away, and it's a bell-shaped curve. It starts right here. It goes off to the side the same distance. When I get behind her, it actually is going to be a little further behind her than when I'm in front of her, unless she turns her head. I think she started to turn her head. Okay, now people will do that to maintain the boundary. In fact, most people, because they will actually turn when somebody gets behind them. But if they don't turn and look, they're only going to feel comfortable when you move out a little bit further. Now, I'm going to do something that's offensive right now. She's given me permission to do that. I won't hurt her, but she's just told me where her boundary is. Now, remember I told you your boundary allows you to be appropriate in terms of allowing somebody else to have one. This is an example of somebody knowing where the boundary is, but not letting her have one. If I walk in here and stand and bump her or touch her or start doing this to her, I'm offending her, because she has just told me, and I've watched her, that her boundary with me is like this, and she really doesn't want me any closer than that, unless we agree to hug. You know, she says to me, Pia, would you give me a hug? What she's doing right at the moment she does that, she's standing here, and I'm right here with this 18 inches. When she says, Pia, would you give me a hug, she's already started scooting that thing in there. And in order to hug her, she will have had to pull that boundary way in and glue it to her skin. You follow me with that? So this thing moves in and moves out. If she was very angry with me and disturbed with me, she wouldn't get this close to me. She'd probably automatically stand a little back from me if she was angry with me. But if she was feeling close to me and wanted a hug, she asked for it, that means she's automatically pulled that in. Another issue here is, let's just say she's mad and I want a hug from her, or I want to hug her. If she's angry with me and I'm not aware of it, but I'm standing here, she's got a boundary, and I say, would you give me a hug? And she doesn't want to. She'd say, no, I don't want to. If I have one, she says, I'm angry with you, I don't really want to hug you. But if I have one, that's going to be okay if she says that to me. If she doesn't have one, she won't be able to say no, she'll just let me hug her anyway and feel miserable. Because if she says yes, hug me, but she really means no, then I get in here, she's going to feel offended. But whose problem it is Amy's, not mine, because I can assume she wants me to hug if she says yes, if she agrees to it. Okay? Thanks, appreciate that. It's an energy experience, and if you're wondering about where your boundaries are, your external boundaries are, to start watching people by using your eyes and making eye contact to find out where your boundary is with them. And it can be different with the same person. For example, if Pat and I are getting along and I feel real good about that, he can stand real close to me and I'm absolutely comfortable. If, on the other hand, he's angry with me or I'm angry with him, we don't stand close together like that. We kind of stand back and far. If we're extremely angry, we sit 18 feet away from each other in the living room in order to even talk. So we're the same person, the thing can move out and move in, you know? And with different people, it's different. Like, some people feel safe to me, so I let them get kind of close. Other people don't feel safe for me, for whatever reason. And I'm about kind of backing up from them to negotiate that distance. I don't let them stand in my face anymore. Some people feel real scary. Just by looking at them, they look real scary. You can bet if I see them over by that car and I don't want them any closer to me, I'll start walking so they can't get near me. That means I have that external boundary. It moves out and it moves in. The internal boundary is harder to take care of. Now let me show you a little exercise that'll help you have one. This is one, this will, when you first start to do this, it's going to feel real weird and you won't be very successful with it. Hang in there anyway, because when the first time it works for you, you will be amazed at how wonderful you feel. You need to, this is how you make your internal boundary work. Let's just say you're standing in your kitchen. Here you are right here and your husband is about ready to confront you or your wife. Let's say you're Ann and he's Harry. Now, he looks at you and says, you know, I need to tell you I'm angry with you. Right then you know a confrontation is going on. He's going to express his reality to you. And if you're going to be intimate and appropriate, you're going to set your internal boundary so you can hear it. First thing you do is image that boundary system around you like a bell. What I tell people to do is to visualize a Smucker's jelly glass jar, make it real clean and sparkling, turn it upside down, dry it off, set it over your head, make it great big, and then set it down over your whole body. Just do that sometime. If you didn't do it right now, do it later so you can visualize that around you in an instant. Then I say, remind yourself that you are to be listening to your husband, not defending yourself, but listening, tune your ears in. It used to be I'd either go into a shame attack or a rage attack. For example, when my husband confronted me, I couldn't hear when I was raging or in shame attack. So I used to, when I first started trying to do this, I'd hang on to my ear to remind myself that the only option right now is to listen, not defend myself. And so then what you want to do is set up that emotional boundary by saying to yourself, what Harry has to say to me is more about Harry than it is about me unless I've offended him. That'll set that emotional boundary. That will put you in a position where you can hear Harry's reality because you know it's more about him anyway than you unless you offended him. But you want to note the impact of your behavior on him. That sets up the emotional thing. The next thing you want to do is start listening to what the nature of the confrontation is, and use your intellectual boundary with this one. You will hear information that sounds true, not true, or questionable. You will do three different things with each kind of information. If you decided it's true and that's using your intellectual boundary, what you do with that is you let it in and embrace it and have your feelings about it. Embrace and have your feelings about it. It may feel crummy. It may make you feel real happy. It depends on what he's confronting you about. If when you listen you decide it's not true because you didn't do it and he's mistaken, watch it kind of pass at your boundary, bounce it off your boundary and land it on the floor, but acknowledge to Harry that you heard him. Like nod your head. If you decide it's questionable, what you do with that one is that you let it in, but let it in the back part of your boundary and set it on your shoulder where you can watch it. If you're not sure about some data about you, don't take it in, embrace it, and have a lot of feeling reality around it. What you want to do is just watch it. It'll move, if you watch it, eventually from questionable to not true or questionable to true. If it moves from questionable to not true, what you do is you throw it out. Remember I told you that your intellectual boundary we'll let things in, keep things out, and throw things out. That is the instant where you throw something out. Take it from your shoulder and toss it out. The first one lets it in. The not true keeps it out. In this instant, when it goes from questionable to not true, it throws it out. If, and you watch it, it goes from questionable to true, which is the experience most people have in treatment when their family comes to confront them about themselves, Then what you do with that one is you haul it around, embrace it, and have your feelings about it. This allows you to live in action for yourself rather than in constant codependent reaction to other people. If you're on this end of the experience, understand that you have the right to confront anybody with your reality. You need only face the consequences of doing that. And so as you confront with your reality, you need to remind yourself that your reality is more about you than the person you're confronting, unless that person truly has offended you. You need to say that to yourself before you ever confront. This allows people to be intimate. Without this emotional boundary, I don't know how anybody can be intimate. Because you're going to either be blaming yourself or attacking the other person for whatever is going on. When that's going on, there's no intimacy exchange. Intimacy is experienced on four levels. It's experienced physically with your body, intellectually when you share your thinking reality, and emotionally when you share your feeling reality. That's the most powerful one, believe it or not. You cannot do that without a very good boundary system. It'll get screwed up. So recovery then, on your step one, assess what condition your boundary is, and then it requires you going into action and establishing your boundaries. And that's the end of this lecture.